Okay, welcome. This is episode 333 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. In this short podcast, I'm going to be talking about pressors for the USMLE Step 2 CK and Step 3 exams. Pressors are just things that people kind of hate studying. And thankfully, the information you need to know for Step 2 CK, Step 3, from a pressor perspective, is pretty minimal. So I just want to basically catalog all of that here. But again, as you know, I'm not going to be giving you just straight up information with zero context. No, if I do that, that would not be very helpful, obviously, right? So what we're going to be doing today is we're going to be talking about pathophysiology. We're going to be talking about clinical scenarios where you would employ those things on MBME exams. As I do, for those of you that are taking Step 2 CK, Step 3 anytime soon, because I know a lot of people are going to be taking the exams within the next month, so their scores can be out in time for ERAS. I do have a course coming up, like a Step 2 CK, Step 3 review course coming up next week. It's Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And I have an MBME test taking strategies course coming up on Wednesday next week. Again, tons of people have taken these courses and they've done extremely well on the exams. So if that's something you're interested in, just shoot me an email through the website. Again, I've had many people that have taken the exams very recently as like today even. Right. And again, I've been getting very good reports, very good feedback on the course. So if you're interested in the course, just shoot me an email through the website and I'll give you some more information on cost and things like that. OK, so let's just jump right into it. So I think the best way to describe this topic today is to just break things up by inotropes versus vasopressors. Right. So let me talk about inotropes first. Inotropes, by definition, they work almost exclusively on the heart. Right? Because if you think about it, you use a pressor when you're in a state of hypotension or when your blood pressure is really low and you want to try to maintain perfusion to your body's organs and tissues. So you can raise your blood pressure in one of two major ways, right? One is you can make the heart beat stronger and faster, right? That'll be positive inotropy, right? And inotropy is an agent that by definition works on the heart. Alternatively, another way you can make this happen is by giving a vasoactive agent, a vasopressor, right? So this is something that is more of like a systemic vascular resistance increasing agent, right? Because if you increase systemic vascular resistance, that will increase up, that will basically clamp down on your blood vessels. And that's going to overall cause an increase in blood pressure. So let's go ahead and talk about these. Basically, today I'm going to be talking about like seven drugs, and that will be pretty much it. So in terms of the inotropes, right? So what if they give you a question about a person and the person started taking an inotrope and a few days later, the person developed like yellow vision, abdominal pain, hyperkalemia. If you see this, I really hope you're thinking about digoxin, right? Digoxin. Remember, digoxin on MBME exams, the way it works is that it inhibits the sodium-potassium ATPase pump, right? So the thing is, if you inhibited the sodium-potassium ATPase pump, then there'll be less sodium coming out of your myocardial cells. If there's less sodium coming out of your myocardial cells, then there'll be more sodium intracellularly in your myocardial cells. If there's more sodium intracellularly, then the sodium-calcium exchanger will stop working. Because remember, that exchanger's job is to get calcium out of the myocardial cell and bring sodium in. But if there's so much sodium inside the cell, the gradient for sodium to rush into the cell for calcium to be pumped out goes away. So ultimately, when you take digoxin, the amount of intracellular calcium you have is going to go up. And that's going to cause more inotropy, right? So that's how digoxin is a positive inotrope, right? But there are a few key things your friends at the MBME need to know about digoxin. One is, if a person has digoxin toxicity, it's very high yield to remember that if you give anti-DIG Fab fragments, right? So I'll say that again, anti-DIG Fab fragments, you can reverse DIG toxicity. It's basically like a monoclonal antibody against digoxin. And then digoxin, there's this potassium conundrum that many people tend to screw up on exams. And believe it or not, they test this stuff like all the time, right? People just mess it up all the time, right? So the thing is, I'll say the statement and then I'll explain the pathophys because it makes perfect sense if you just reason through it. The first thing is digoxin causes hyperkalemia as a side effect. But on the flip side, if you are hypokalemic, you're predisposed to digoxin toxicity. Right. So let me explain what I mean. Right. So the thing is, we know that normally the sodium potassium ATPase pump, its job is to get three sodiums out of the cell and two potassiums into the cell. So it gets potassiums literally into cells. So if for some bizarre reason you inhibit that sodium potassium ATPase pump with digoxin, then you're not going to be able to get potassium into cells. If you can't get potassium into cells, then it will hang out in your bloodstream. If it hangs out in your bloodstream, you're going to have hyperkalemia, right? You're going to have hyperkalemia. That's a very high yield thing to keep at the back of your mind for exams. But, so some of you may be like, okay, Divine, that makes sense. I understand why ditch causes hyperkalemia. Well, how does hypokalemia predispose you to ditch toxicity? Well, let me explain. The thing is, again, we just said that digoxin works by inhibiting the sodium potassium ATPase pump. If you inhibit the sodium potassium ATPase pump, that's how the drug as we know it works. But the thing is, for you to inhibit that pump, it needs to bind to the potassium binding site. So the thing is, if you're hypokalemic, let's say, for example, you're taking diuretics at the same time as digoxin, which is not an uncommon practice, that's going to lower your potassium. That's going to create more binding sites on sodium potassium ATPase pumps for digoxin, right? And if you create more binding sites, then digoxin can accumulate and can start getting toxicity, right? You can start getting like premature ventricular contractions. You can get quite a number of different problems. Okay. So those are kind of like the big things I want to mention with digoxin. Now, the next inotrope I will go to, what is that inotrope that can be used for chemical stress tests? I really hope you're saying, oh, Divine, is dobutamine, right? So dobutamine is a simple molecule to work with, right? Basically, dobutamine is a beta-1 agonist. Remember, we have beta-1 adrenergic receptors on our blood. We find it at the afferent arterial, but we also primarily find it in the heart. And when you activate that receptor, right, remember it's a G-protein coupled receptor. It's a stimulatory G-protein coupled receptor that's going to cause you to have an increased heart rate and increased contractility, right? So in people that cannot exercise, for example, you can do a chemical stress test by basically stressing out the heart by giving a beta-1 agonist like dobutamine. Another thing you can also do is, you know, there is also the coronary steel principle. I've described in many different podcasts that you can use for chemical stress tests with like dipyridamole and adenosine. But we're not going to go into that today because we're focusing primarily on pressors. I've described that in other podcasts in the past. So that's kind of like a big thing there, right? So what do we use dobutamine for? Again, like I said, we use it for chemical stress tests. And we also use it for people in cardiogenic shock, right? We use it for cardiogenic shock. Now, one thing I will just say is, our friends at the MBME, every now and then, they write these bizarre questions where they ask you what will happen to the renin-angiotensin aldosterone system. If a person is placed on dobutamine, well, it's kind of high yield to know that, remember, beta-1 receptors are also found at the afferent arterial of the nephron, right? And when you stimulate beta-1 receptors, that increases renin production. So when you give a beta-1 agonist like dobutamine, your renin goes up, your angiotensin 1 and 2 both go up, and your aldosterone will go up as well. That's a high yield thing to keep in mind for exams. And one thing I just want to say, these inotropes, none of them have any mortality benefits in like heart failure or anything like that. Okay, now the final inotrope I'm going to talk about is milrinone, right? So milrinone, the good thing about milrinone is it's a pretty awesome drug for many reasons, right? So milrinone is a phosphodiesterase inhibitor. So you may be like, huh, Divine, I know phosphodiesterase inhibitors are very good at decreasing systemic vascular resistance. How can a phosphodiesterase inhibitor be a positive inotrope? Well, the thing is, remember, phosphodiesterase is an enzyme that breaks down cyclic AMP. Well, the thing is, cyclic AMP is kind of like a guy that kind of acts different ways based on where he is, right? When you have increased cyclic AMP in your heart, that's actually going to make your cardiac muscles contract better. But when you have an increase in cyclic AMP in your blood vessels, aka smooth muscle, you're going to have a relaxation, right? So the thing is, milrinone is actually pretty great because, one, it makes your heart work better, but two, it reduces the amount of work your heart has to do. Because think about it, if you raise cyclic AMP in smooth muscle, in blood vessels, you get vasodilation, you're decreasing afterload, right? So that's making it easier for blood to be ejected out of the heart. So the thing is, milrinone is good in the sense that it increases your cardiac output, but at the same time, it decreases afterload, right? So it increases cardiac output again by increasing cardiac contractility, right? So it raises your systolic blood pressure, but at the same time, it's bringing down your diastolic blood pressure because your afterload is going down. So if you look at the spread between the systolic and diastolic blood pressures, that's your pulse pressure, right? So milrinone widens your pulse pressure. That's very important and very high yield to know for purposes of exams. Okay, so now let's jump into the vasopressors, right? So again, these are agents that work primarily by constricting blood vessels as a means of propping up blood pressures, right? So the first one I'm going to talk about, right? So what if they give you a question about a patient and this patient is in septic shock? Then this patient starts, you've given norepinephrine, and the norepinephrine, you've gotten to like the maximal tolerated therapy. And then they ask for your next best step in management. Your next best step in management is to add vasopressin. And we'll talk about norepinephrine in a bit. Norepinephrine is the first line pressor in septic shock, right? But vasopressin, right, is a drug that is basically second line in the surviving sepsis algorithm. In terms of adding pressors for septic shock, basically for septic shock, first line is norepinephrine, second line is vasopressin, third line is epinephrine, right? So vasopressin, how does vasopressin work? Well, vasopressin is actually a derivative of antidiuretic hormone, right? So the thing is, if you really think about it, it does many things to maintain your blood pressures, right? So vasopressin, again, by acting on the vasopressin V1 receptor, right? Remember that vasopressin V1 receptor is a GQ coupled receptor, right? So it does all those protein kinase C businesses, right? And by doing that, it causes a vasoconstriction, and that increases your blood pressure. But remember, vasopressin, that's not all it's used for in exams, right? Remember, if you have like a 6-year-old boy that is bedwetting, right? Remember, you need to be over the age of 5 to bedwet. Those kids can be treated actually with vasopressin, right? We can treat them with vasopressin. Again, we're thinking more like desmopressin, right? Remember, desmopressin, again, is very, very similar to vasopressin, right? So, because basically, we know that vasopressin, desmopressin, they're kind of like ADH analogs. So they basically suck up free water from your urine so you don't lose volume, right? That's going to obviously raise your blood pressure, and that's going to prevent the child from peeing in the first place. Although remember, in general, if we're treating a person that has nocturnal enuresis, we're usually going to do fluid restriction at night as a first-line measure. Second-line measures could be things like desmopressin or an enuresis alarm. And then another thing you may see vasopressin used for in NBM exams, right, again in the desmopressin form, is they can give you a question about a person that has this bleeding disorder, and they tell you that the PTT, the bleeding time, are both elevated, and the person has an abnormal restocytin cofactor assay, right? In those situations, I hope you're thinking about von Willebrand disease. In von Willebrand disease, remember, the way you treat it, because remember, it's obviously a deficiency of von Willebrand factor, the way you're going to treat that is by giving desmopressin. Desmopressin is going to increase the release of von Willebrand factor from your Weibo-Palladi buddies, right? If you release more von Willebrand factor from your Weibo-Palladi buddies, that will help a person that has von Willebrand disease. Remember, the PTT goes up in von Willebrand disease because those people, their factor 8 now has a decreased half-life, because von Willebrand factor is like a protecting group for factor 8. Another use on NBM exams for vasopressin, again in the desmopressin form, is in a person that has bleeding in the setting of end-stage renal disease. Because remember, when you have end-stage renal disease, you have uremia. When you have high levels of urea, then your platelets don't work well. So you can improve platelet function by giving desmopressin. Desmopressin improves platelet function. That's why it's actually very helpful in treating the coagulopathy associated with end-stage renal disease. Now, the next pressor I'm going to talk about is phenylephrine, right? So phenylephrine, the good thing about phenylephrine is it's a pure alpha-1 agonist, okay? It's a pure alpha-1 agonist. Remember, we primarily have alpha-1 receptors on our blood vessels. When you activate them, when you agonize them, that's going to cause a vasoconstriction, right? So usually they like to bring in like phenylephrine and its close cousin ephedrine, right? E-P-H-E-D-R-I-N-E. They are both alpha-1 agonists. When you activate those receptors, that's going to clamp down on your blood vessels. When you clamp down on the blood vessels, that's going to ultimately cause you to, you know, increase your systemic vascular resistance, and that's going to raise your blood pressures. Now remember, when you raise your blood pressures like that by alpha-1 agonism, right, that's gonna, you're gonna have increased pressure of blood just banging on your baroreceptors in your blood vessels, right? And when that happens, right, your heart is gonna be like, whoa, why is my blood pressure too high? So you're gonna get a very powerful parasympathetic discharge. So when you get an alpha-1 agonist, you're classically going to have a reflex bradycardia, right? You're gonna have a reflex bradycardia. And usually, where do they use ephedrine or phenylephrine on NBM exams? They use them primarily for a person that just gets anesthetic. Remember, anesthetics can really drop a person's blood pressures, right? So if you get the anesthetic and your blood pressures drop, they can just give you an alpha-1 agonist, and that thing will just very rapidly raise your blood pressures. And then finally, the last person I'm going to talk about is norepinephrine, right? Norepinephrine, remember, again, for the most part, we use it as the first-line pressor in septic shock, right? It has both alpha 1 and beta 1 effects, but the predominant effect is alpha 1. So it raises blood pressure in that way. And again, remember, for septic shock, first line is norepinephrine, second line is vasopressin, third line is epinephrine. And then the last thing I'll just say about epinephrine, we use it a lot for ACLS algorithms, right? When a person has like a cardiac arrest, has many of those ventricular arrhythmias, we tend to interchange epinephrine and amiodarone. And then remember, we use epinephrine because of its beta 2 agonist effect in a person that has anaphylactic shock, right? In fact, if a person has an anaphylactic transfusion reaction, that'll be a very good situation to use epinephrine. So yeah, I just intended this to be a very short podcast, but if you know all these things I talked about, I'll be really shocked if you got any pressor or inotrope related question are wrong on your step 2 CK step 3 exams. So as I do at the end of every podcast, I again offer a review, pretty comprehensive review courses for the USMLE step 2 CK and step 3 exams. And these are group courses that are held over Zoom. Again, many people have attended these courses and found it to be helpful. I also do one-on-one tutoring for step 1, step 2 CK, step 3, preclinical med school exams, third year shelf exams. And then I know many people are preparing their IRS applications now, so I help with that process, reviewing personal statements, recommendation letters, IRS application itself, mock interviews. I do all those things. So if you're interested in any of those things, just shoot me an email and I'll be happy to point you in the right direction. So I also have this podcast on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. And then I also have a YouTube channel, right? Divine Intervention, USMLE podcasts and videos. So thank you for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day. God bless you. Thank you.